They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, he just celebrated his 21st birthday. He is the head coach. I've been dying to use that joke since here. Ryan Saunders, head coach, Minnesota Timberwolves. Sorry, man. I couldn't even get the joke out before.
That's ridiculous, man.
Before I even
I was just about to say I'm glad to be here with you, but I'm rethinking my opening.
Just an icebreaker right there.
Hey, remind me to talk about the best thing that a fan has said to me this season, just based off of that.
The best thing?
Season.
Oh, no, go. Since we're there, go now. Like, best thing.
So you lead off with the 21st birthday joke, which was, that's funny.
Yeah.
But so my first game in Oklahoma City, coaching, their fans are great. They're hard on the opponent, but they're great. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how in touch you are with your formative years of movies and pop culture. But I have it was dead quiet. There was a free throw, and some guy in the crowd yelled, "Hey Billy Haywood, why don't you put Lou Aldangan, he was hurt at the time, something like that." So Billy Haywood was the 12-year-old, Twins manager
in
Little Big League.
Yeah.
So that was – I turned around.
Did you catch Billy? You got the reference?
I got the reference. I turned around and I gave him a thumbs up because it was that good that I wanted to acknowledge him, that he did his research, and the whole section started dying.
You have to acknowledge a good joke.
Was great. It was that was perfect. Perfectly timed. Like, he was waiting. He had it.
That's a tremendous bad sports movie reference right there.
It was
the Billy Haywood line. You are, though, youngest head coach in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the youngest ever in the NBA?
I'm not keeping track.
I'm not
keeping. That's your job to do the research.
I don't do much research for this podcast. You should know that by now, Ryan. But let's kind of go back, though, to the very beginning, especially when your father, Flip Saunders, who everybody knows, legendary, coached in the CBA, coached in the NBA for a long period of time, and finished in Minnesota. But when you were born, he was kind of your early years. Mm-hmm. He was kind of bouncing around the CBA, right? What was your early years like? Were you bouncing around with him?
Yeah. Now we bounced around as a family, and it's that's the thing that for most of my life, he has for the life I really remember, teenage years, the elementary school, those years, he was in the NBA. But the thing that I think people, don't give him enough credit for, and a number of coaches who have worked their way through it, through the G League and through the CBA, is that, he had to grind, really grind. We were in a number of places: La Crosse, Wisconsin, Rapid City, South Dakota, Tulsa, Oklahoma. I could keep Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I could keep going. I mean, we were all over the place, and he, there's not a lot of money down there, mm-hmm. At the beginning, but you make it work, and ultimately worked out for him.
Mm. What was, was it just like apartment to apartment?
Yeah,
because you're probably not making a ton of money as a CBA coach.
Pretty much, and but a lot of things, and I told my wife that one of these, at some point, we do have a young child, but at some point, I want to drive through those old, towns that he coached in, just mm-hmm. to see where we were. But it made us closer as a family, and I think that's one of the reasons that I'm so big on relationships and connection, and really I believe in the family oriented in environment and organization, is because my family was so close. I shared a room with my younger sister for an apartment for a long time there, that made us closer. Mm-hmm. And then obviously when we get to Minnesota, things become a little better, you still have that bond, though.
Did you have, you're so young when you're going through that, but did you have a favorite place to live in for whatever period of time it was?
A lot of my best memories, I mean, Minnesota is home. That's my favorite place. But a lot of my best memories were in La Crosse, Wisconsin, when you won two CBA championships. Just our family was, so tight, and those are my younger sisters were born. They're twins, and I just have a lot of good memories from there.
Mm-hmm. Ed, while he's going through the coaching, is that something that takes root with you? And when does it take? Obviously, it does take mm-hmm. root with you. But when did it take root with you to be in the coaching circle?
I mean, I always knew I wanted to do something in basketball. You know, like any, I think, kid who plays and who falls in love with the game, you want to be a basketball player when you grow up. I learned quickly that that wasn't going to be in the cards for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't going to be talented enough to play professional basketball. So, you know, the coaching route was one that I knew was going to be, you know, what I was destined for, just because I love the game. I love everything involved, the preparation, the competition, you know, just the togetherness that you can feel with a team. And he taught me that early, and, you know, it stayed with me.
Were you around a lot of your father's teams early on? Did you try to spend as much time as you could around them?
Yeah, I was an annoying kid that was always around. I mean, I was a quiet kid. I was really shy, but you know, I was one of those kids that was always around. So I mean, I probably annoyed a number of players just my presence being there, where they felt like they may have had to watch their language, things like that. But yeah, I was there, but you know, I wasn't there just to hang out and, you know, just have some, because my dad needed to babysit me. I was there because I really liked to be around it. You know,
is there a Steph Curry next to Del Curry type picture of you somewhere out there on the internet, of you next to your father at age like 5?
You know, I'm sure there's something out there. I'll have to look, but I'm sure there's something out there. But there is one that one of our photographers found last season when I took over. It was when I was a ball boy, when I was 9 years old, and I was waiting for, I had KG on one side, Stephon Marbury on my other side, and I was waiting at half court for them to take their, you know, there's a stoppage of play for them to get their warm-ups off and you know, get their warm-ups, take them back to the bench. So there's one of those.
That brings you way back, man. People forget how good that tandem was, and like unfulfilled potential.
Absolutely.
Was KG and Steph. What do you remember about those two guys playing together?
Yeah, you know, it's being young, you know, I remember just being envious of what they were doing for the city. I mean, there was a buzz. They're both young on the same timeline right there. People saw glimpses, and I think in Minnesota, people saw glimpses of what was to come, and that there were happy days to come, you know, for them coming to games, just things like that. And obviously, you know, things ultimately didn't work out. But, you know, my dad, I remember him, he told it a number of times. He told a story that he said he told Stephon, you know, when he did move on, that one day him, KG, and Steph were going to sit around, have a beer, and talk about what could have been. You know, I don't think they ever got a chance to do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, you know, it could have been something special.
That would have been a great conversation to have, because I think deep down, Steph probably regrets, you know, when he looks back on it all, because New York didn't work out, Jersey, whatever, even Phoenix didn't really work out. I mean, that was... That combination could have been something. That was the foundation for a really good team.
Yeah, no, it definitely could have. And you know, everybody's path is different, and I believe there's a reason for you know, decisions that are made, and you know, where you end up. And you know, Stephon's doing great over in China, so you know, I'm happy for him with all that. He reached out to me, you know, when I took over, and we've had some dialogue. So it's been cool to get back in touch with some of the guys that my dad had an impact on, and for them to, you know, push their support behind me and just the organization.
I mean, he's a legend in China. I mean, like a literal legend with his own statue and everything.
That's what I was going to say. When you got a statue of yourself, you know, in, you know, obviously the U.S., but let alone a place like China, you know, where, you know, he's an import player. I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Mm. So.
The bond between your father and KG was something that everybody kind of knows about and knows how strong it was. But when you were younger, how did you see that bond kind of form? Because I mean, how did that really strengthen to the point where it got to?
You know, I saw it as I think it was like Kevin, you know, people see Kevin, his intensity and his, you know, how he approaches the game and it just is a competitive fire, but they don't understand his heart and his coachability. Like, that's one of the things I always tell, you know, young players or players when I'm going to speak to a kids camp. Like, my dad would say he was the most coachable player he ever had, and this guy was a you know, is a Hall of Famer, and I mean, one of the MVP, just, you know, who he was at the time. He was always the guy that was allowed the coach to coach him hard. And so I think that bond really brought them together. And, you know, my dad used that on me a lot growing up when I'd get frustrated if he was, he's working me out and he tries to correct me on something. And I can hear it over and over in my head. He must have said it hundreds of times. He'd always say, so I can coach KG, the best player in the league, but I can't coach you. And he used to say that all the time. And as soon as he'd say that, I knew that he was right. Mm-hmm. But
the compliment that people pay to KG all the time is best practice player ever. Did you ever see that? And what did you see?
No, I did. And he, when I was young, and then I actually got a chance to be with him when I was an assistant with the Timberwolves for, his last year.
Right.
And he was the same practice player. I mean, it was unbelievable. And, everybody's got great KG stories. And I got a great one, just shows how intense he is in practice. You know, I'm probably 9-10 years old, and it must have been like MEA or one of those times where you got school off. So I went down to practice, and they were scrimmaging, and KG, like, that was my guy. Like, I'd rebound for him. Like, he always used to tell me, he's like, you're my personal ball boy. Like, we had a really, really tight bond, and so he was so intense during the scrimmage that, they're going up and down, and Wally Szczerbiak hits a shot out of the corner, and I'm kind of sitting down there, and Wally sticks his hand out, to give me a high five. And, like, hey, any NBA player there, if you're a kid, you're going to shake the NBA player's hand. But he was on KG. He was on the opponent to KG at that time during the scrimmage. And so I gave him, shook his hand, and KG just starts yelling at me. He's like, oh, so you're with them now, and he just starts yelling. And what that did was I saw the intensity, go up, and the fire in his eyes, and they ended up coming back and winning. And then he's talking trash to me as a 10-year-old because I shook his hand. Mm-hmm. But that's what you need to do to get going.
There was I still got to look at the us against the world mentality that KG had in Boston up close and personal. I don't think I've seen anything like that. That type of consistent intensity, no let up. If you're on his team, you're his guy.
Yes,
the second you're not on his team, you are no longer his guy.
Oh no, and it was remarkable, like, to see what a lot of what I believe in as a basketball coach was adopted through things I learned from KG, and that's the loyalty part of things, and just what you coach the person before you coach the player.
Mm-hmm. I remember he was so tough to get to sit down, do like any kind of one-on-one stuff, man. Like, there was one year, this is the year that got traded to Brooklyn.
So I didn't learn that from him.
No, he's sitting there with me. Yeah, that's better idea. I don't think you want to adopt that KG policy. It never works out well, especially for a coach. But when he was traded to Brooklyn, I was trying to write like a TikTok of how it all kind of went down, and he wouldn't do any kind of deep dive into it. But I'd found out in previous years that he loved the show Boardwalk Empire. And I was doing boxing stuff with HBO. So I went to HBO and got like an advanced screener of the season, and like effectively bribed him with a copy of the first like six episodes of that season. And as I gave it to him, he's like, what do I got to do with this? I'm like, 5 minutes, just 5 minutes. That's all I need.
And he did it.
And he did it. He did it.
That's big time.
That gave me 5 minutes for... Is that like even ethical to give somebody?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't know why you're...
It's not really a payoff.
It's smart to put it on tape.
Come on. He's retired now. It's all good. So coaching for you, and so it's in your mind as you're a kid. What was your first coaching job, and the conversation with your father about becoming a coach? How did that go? Yeah.
Well, I'd say coaching jobs, your first time you really coach is, as a kid, is you work your way through camps, you work your way, you do things like that. I spent a graduate assistant year at the University of Minnesota, and then spent 10 years in the NBA as an assistant. So we're in Vegas now, obviously, and Summer League, I spent a number of years coaching Summer League, so that helps prepare you a lot too. But I remember when I told my dad I wanted to go into the coaching, and he asked me, he's like, are you sure? Those were his exact words, because he knows the toll that it can take on you, and it can take on the people around you. And I think he was thinking about that CBA, that it can be a grind with things. And obviously it's we're really fortunate what the NBA has and basketball has really afforded my family. Like, we're very fortunate for that. But I think he wanted to make sure that I knew what what it could take to get to ascend to the level that, that I wanted to ascend to.
So the first NBA gig was in Washington?
Yeah, with the Wizards.
On your dad's staff down there. Did you have to fight the kind of perception of how did that manifest itself?
Yeah, and but it was nothing I ever fought. I'm the first one to always admit that the reason I got my first opportunity in the NBA was, you know, because my dad. And but it was also because I was good at what I have a knowledge. And I was good at what I do. And but he told me, and then actually somebody else whose father is a Hall of Famer who still works in the NBA. He didn't know me, but he tracked my number down when I got in the NBA at 23 in Washington. And he texted me and he said, one thing I want you to know is that people may say things about you and your dad. He goes, but every single person in the NBA got a break somehow. It's what you do when you get your break, because not everybody stays in. And that really stuck with me in terms of, you know, putting the work in, and you gotta do more and be better and try to treat people better than somebody who might not have a father in the NBA, because I definitely wanted to go against that stigma.
The first couple of years, what kind of responsibilities did you have with that, with the Wizards?
I did a lot of player development. Mm-hmm. I was heavily involved in player development, and I also, you know, believe it or not, started using analytics. We created our own iPad application before the iPad even came out. We actually had to, you know, kind of chop up a MacBook and make it a touchscreen, and I used that on the bench. I'm sure there's a picture. I mean, this thing was about 20 pounds. So it was a workout, too, that I'd carry around during games, but it tracked real-time efficiencies. And that was kind of before analytics was the norm. So people kind of looked at me a little bit nutty, but it was something I believed in. At the time, my dad believed in. So I was heavily involved in both the analytics as well as the player development early on. And then Randy Whitman, really, when he took over, he really elevated my responsibilities. So I give him a lot of credit.
Those were some wild teams in D.C. Oh, yeah. That was some interesting times. I used to do a radio show with Caron Butler, and I've heard many a story of the old Washington Wizards.
Yeah, I probably got a few, too. But you... people have asked me that, and those years really helped me. Mm-hmm. It helped me be able to adapt, to whatever's thrown at you. So at this point now in this role, I'm grateful for those. Mm-hmm.
Going back to Minnesota, to work with your father again, was that a no-brainer for you to do it? I mean,
yeah, no, it actually wasn't.
Oh, okay.
I was going to stay in Washington, and I had told him that. And because, you know, what we had just kind of talked about, I really liked being on my own, and I really liked, you know, forging my own path. But you know, when I had told him, hey, I'm going to stay in Washington, he sat on it for a few days, and then you know, he put his dad hat on and called me one night, and I remember him saying, like, hey, I need you to come back and help me build this thing back up to where it was. And when he said, I need you, that was all I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, before that, he was offering me a job, and you know, when he said, "I need you to come back," I came back. That was a no-brainer then.
That must have resonated differently with you then. Like, if he's just saying, like, it goes from being like, "I'm gonna offer you a job," to "I need you to take this job."
Yeah, yeah, it did, and you know, I went, you know, through the process though. I went through. I asked to be interviewed. I went through the process, and you know, with the people that other people within the organization that didn't know me, for them to interview me, because I thought that was important, not just for him, for the people, but for me. And you know, it was, I knew that coming back there'd be, you know, things that would help my career, and there might be things that, you know, if handled wrong, could, you know, put you back a little bit. But it did ultimately end up helping me, and it was, you know, it gave me the ability to spend the last year of my dad's life with him, and really be around him, and then be there for my family.
When he passes away, and you know, after you, the personal side of it is, you get through that. Professionally, what are you thinking there? Do you want it, like, I mean, do you want to even stay in Minnesota? Do you want some? I mean, I wouldn't blame you. Part of you was like, I want to start something completely fresh.
Yeah, I was very heavily contemplating you know, just being done with it and going and doing, you know, coaching, you know, in another, you know, whether it be high school, whether it be, you know, college, somewhere else. I was very, you know, I was thinking about that because it was really hard to walk into a building that he helped, you know, design, that I saw his office every day, you know, just those little things, but his light was always off. I mean, it sounds heartbreaking, but it felt that way. Mm. Because it was really difficult. Him and I were beyond best friends. You know, you can ask anybody in the NBA, they'd tell you, you know, our bond was really, really deep. But, you know, I ultimately just kept pushing forward. My mother encouraged me, actually reconnected with my wife a couple weeks after his death. And she told me, you know, to just keep pushing. And, you know, for that reason, I give them a lot of credit too. Mm-hmm.
The when Tibbs takes over, mm-hmm. are you sure that he even wants you, yeah, on that staff? I mean, what's your what's going through the process there?
Yeah, no, it was just that, and you know, it was his, you know, decision to keep me around, because I don't think he received a mandate or anything like that, because we went through, you know, I ended up coaching summer league that summer, and you know, didn't know if I was going to be staying around, but he, you know, once again, he's another person I give a lot of credit to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I learned a lot from him, and he'll land on his feet. You know, obviously he's so dedicated to the game, and just the things that I learned from him with the details and the putting in the work and just everything that goes into it, is, you know, incredible. And so a lot of, you know, he gave me some great opportunities that, you know, obviously it's hard not seeing him all the time anymore, but you know, he really helped me.
I think as much as Tibbs wants to be coaching, I think this is good for him. Seeing vacation Tibbs over the last year, he spent a lot of time in Boston. He was around,
yeah,
that team a lot. Even in like the stands at Summer League, he's kind of waving at you in the stands. Like, he's very much a looser guy.
That's
now.
Great.
I think he needed a little,
yeah,
he'll get back in, no question. Like, yeah, he's too smart, yeah, a basketball,
yeah,
mind. But I think a break, if he looks back on it, will ultimately, yeah, wind up, yeah, being pretty good for him. But so to fast forward a little bit, you know, this past season starts off, and Jimmy's on the team, mm-hmm, and Tom's the coach, and what was it, a month or two later, all of a sudden, everything there changes. Yeah. What were those first couple of months like as you guys are first trying to piece something together and then watching it all kind of come apart?
Yeah, I mean, it was something like I haven't felt, and I don't think, you know, people within our group have felt, because, you know, we all wanted, you know, we wanted to really be good and really forge forward with things, but obviously, you know, in the NBA, trade requests happen, things you know, come about that you can't control, and you know, unfortunately, if it those things end up you know, affecting, you know, play on the court, obviously new guys get brought in, you know, and then can affect a lot of people's lives with things, but you know, everybody will get to, you know, where they're supposed to be. You know, everybody that was involved in those first couple months, even if they're not with the Wolves now, you know, I'm confident in that. Mm-hmm.
There was it was widely reported about that first practice Jimmy came back, mm-hmm, and the intensity of it.
Yeah.
Do you remember it being as intense as it kind of was put out there as?
I mean, you could probably say right now, I'm making a little bit of a face, because that's the thing that people don't realize. Like, the NBA practices are intense.
Yeah,
you know, these players are competitive, coaches are competitive, like, things happen in practice, and it's, you know, like things like that, it's not the first time I've seen a very intense practice. So as it was happening, I wasn't thinking like how, you know, out of control this is or anything like that, because it was just an intense scrimmage.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, then you hear everybody talk about it, and no offense to you, but, you know, I think sometimes the, you know, things can become storylines.
It mushroomed a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, because I thought we were just, you know, competing.
Mm.
I speak to that where, you know, I just told a story about KG yelling at a 9-year-old kid for giving Wally Szczerbiak a high five. Like, you know, things happen in practice.
They do. But you getting, when they decide to part ways with Tibbs, how did it work for you? What was that process like about the call you got and the consideration you gave to it?
It was hard. It was really hard, because I love Tibbs and the respect I have for him. It was really, really hard. And, it was after a win. So I was, putting my backpack down at home and I received a phone call to go back. And, I went through, once they told me, what was going on and what they wanted for the, foreseeable future, I obviously needed to talk to a number of people before I could accept a post like that. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not something I took lightly. And, I wanted to make sure to do it the right way if I was going to go about that. And ultimately, I ended up, taking it. And, you go through ups and downs through the season. You learn there's different things that happen, as a head coach.
What was the piece of advice, though, that when you're asking friends and family or whoever you were talking to, what was the one that might have resonated with you the most?
Yeah, I think it was the, when I would talk about, I don't know if I want to do it just because of the, my relationship with coach and my respect level for coach Tibbs and just everything, people would say, hey, if you're not taking it, somebody else is going to take it. And, it's an opportunity. Opportunities don't come like this in the NBA. And when you put it that way, it takes you out of, the small-minded thinking, and you realize, that you do have a responsibility to the organization too, who's, paying you. Mm-hmm. And so it was, and I do have a lot of love for the organization. So that really played into it too, when it became a reality.
Knowing the respect you have for Tibbs, of course, but at some point after you take the job, is it kind of set in that here I am at 32 and it's like I'm a damn head coach in the NBA, one of 30, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, yes and no. It, once I took the job, I mean, I think I pretty much dove right into everything. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure the players, I was on the same page with each one of them, so I spent a lot of time with guys individually. Two nights later, we played in Oklahoma City. And, like I said, I mean, that, it's a raucous environment. You got two of the best players in the world at the time on that team. Obviously a great coach in Billy Donovan. Just a lot of things were there that I'm looking at. I'm looking at that game and I'm like, oh, like we couldn't have had a home game against somebody else, that might be struggling at the time. But ultimately the game ended up, a special one that I'll always remember. Mm-hmm.
The relationships with the players, mm-hmm. how important was that for you to kind of hit the ground running, what you'd built as an assistant coach up until that point?
It's everything to me, and it still is, the relationships with players. I think that you coach the human being first and then the player, then the athlete. And, if you can connect on a level that they know that you care about them, then when the hard conversations and when the hard times come in February, they'll still be hard, but you might, have a glimmer of, hope that you can get through those hard times with an individual, because, if you have that connection with things. So that was really important to me, to really make sure that those relationships were still solid, but they also understood that, the relationship was going to be different. Head coach or assistant coach to head coach was going to be different. And I understood that, on my end, that they were not all going to like me at every moment. But I also understood what came with the job. Mm.
The first play you ran, that Oklahoma City game, your father's old bread and butter play there.
Yeah.
Did you have to reteach that? Did you have to teach that to the guys?
I taught it that shoot around.
That shoot around? Say, this is not going to be our playbook going forward, but this is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I maybe ran it one more time, the rest of the year, but I ran it that one time, and it was one of those things that the night before, I wasn't going on much sleep, and I was trying to put together, the shoot around for the next day, and I knew I wanted to walk through what our first play was going to be so we could get the timing and the execution right and, try to start the game off on a positive note. And, the play that just kept coming to my mind was 452 twist, which was a really solid play for that old Timberwolves team with KG. I was like, all right, you get one chance to run a play as a NBA head coach, a first play as NBA head coach, like, let's make it this one, and let's give it, you know, make it a tribute to Dad, mm-hmm. you know, for, you know, our relationship and what everything he's done for me. And I only told my mother that was going to be it. But lucky for everybody else, Kevin McHale, Isaiah Thomas, and Chris Webber, who were doing the game, mm-hmm. you know, in the studio on NBA TV. So Kevin was one of his best friends. Chris Webber used to get that play, ran for him all the time. And Isaiah is a savant. So he noticed that right away. So I did an interview, post-game interview with them right away, and they called it out, and then it mm-hmm. picked up from there.
Yeah. It's so hard to take over a team on the fly mm-hmm. and institute new things. Mm-hmm. How much were you able to put your imprint on the team last year, whether it's play calling, stylistically? Yeah. What were the challenges not having a training camp?
Yeah, I mean, there were major challenges, you know, with that. And, you know, you want to be, you know, respectful of the players, and not overload them. That was important to me. You know, not changing everything. You know, you add some things, and over time, you know, during All-Star break, you can, you know, change some things. But, you know, and also, like, hey, Tibbs did a great job teaching guys. So, you know, it wasn't, you know, where I wanted to completely overhaul things. And it wasn't that, you know, anything I did change or do change isn't because I think anything is done wrong. It's because, you know, you got to do things your way. I mean, there's no right and wrong. It's just your way. And with that, you know, you change some things, but it's hard to change a lot on the fly. Mm.
How much of your, now that you're going into your first full season as a head coach, how much of what you are as a coach mirrors what your father was as a coach?
I mean, that's one thing. I'm glad you asked the question, because that's one thing I want to make, you know, clear, is that we're very different. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I've seen the split screens of our mannerisms and our ticks on the sideline and some of those things. And, you know, I'd say our biggest similarity is how we think it's important, the relationships and the communication with players. We see that as being, you know, a heavy pillar of what we need to, you know, have our foundation in. And but in terms of style of play, you know, I have different ideas than him. Him and I, we had plenty of conversations where he didn't agree with some of my things. I didn't agree with some of his things. Mm-hmm. But we always respected, you know, respected the opinions of everything. But there will be differences, but there will also be some similarities.
Mm-hmm. When you ended the season, you know, there's more change. There's mm-hmm. a new boss in place mm-hmm. in Gerson Rojas, who you had a relationship mm-hmm. with before. So yep. you weren't going in cold there. But, I mean, at that point, you got to want to still be a head coach there.
Yeah.
I mean, that you must, at some point it kicks in that, like, man, I want to keep this job.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And once, yeah, it's like, once you get a taste of it, you want mm-hmm. more. And so I did want to keep the job, but, I felt no matter what the decision, that Gerson and ownership and everyone came to, I felt good, because I knew that, I did the right way, where after the season was over, I said in my kind of, you know, season-ending press availability that I was going to coach the team, continue to be the head coach until somebody told me I wasn't the head coach, mm-hmm. and I meant that. So, you know, I continued to do, you know, my studies, you know, the development with the players, figure out development plans, work on the summer schedule, you know, draft, you know, things like that. And, you know, I was going to do it until somebody told me not to do it. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, whatever decision they ultimately came to, I knew I didn't, you know, try to politic for the job. I didn't do anything like that. I just did it, you know, my way of that I've always kind of known, and that's just through the work. And, you know, ultimately it ended up, you know, a positive for me, but I would have felt good either way. Mm. I would have felt a lot worse if I didn't get the job, though.
How much bitter is it for you, though, to be the coach, not just a coach in the NBA, to be of the Timberwolves? I mean, it is, you're kind of in your DNA, both Minnesota, the state, and the Timberwolves, because of your family legacy.
Yeah, it's definitely makes it more special, which makes it more, you know, I remember telling, you know, last week when we were doing free agency, I was telling free agents, like, hey, you're going to get all, you know, all we have as a staff. And a big reason on my end is because this is more than a job to me. This is something that I have so much love for the people within this organization. And then, you know, I'd like to, you know, fulfill, you know, a legacy at Minnesota. And, you know, but ultimately it's for, you know, the people of Minnesota, the fans. You want to make it, we talked about, you know, the kind of, I guess you could say, the glory years of the Timberwolves. We want to get that back. And I know it's going to take, you know, it's going to take some time and a lot of hard work and a lot of maneuvering, but I feel confident in everybody we have there.
You're in a conference where it might take 50 wins to get into the playoffs, like yeah. Legitimately. If there's an argument for reseeding, it's going to be this year, I think.
Absolutely.
I mean, 50 wins in the West is just wild. And, you know, there's a lot of players that you have to extract a lot out of, but teams are mostly built around the stars at the top and yep. what they are able to do. And, you know, with a guy like Andrew Wiggins, who has had a lot of criticism of him over the mm-hmm. years, a lot of it comes from that contract that he signed and maybe not living up to it. What more can you extract out of him into next season?
That's going to be an ongoing, I think, thing that people talk about. But I'll say this, is that Andrew's dedication this summer has been, you know, better than I've ever seen it. You know, just in terms of his approach, his workouts. He spent a lot of time in Minnesota. He actually participated in a lot of the, I mean, I guess you can call them kind of OTAs for our young guys, where it was him and then, you know, five rookies or second-year guys, all, you know, going through what we're going to be running offensively, working on playing one-on-one, things like that. I mean, his level of dedication has been, you know, really a positive. So with that, you know, we expect him to approach this season with a chip on his shoulder to prove, you know, whatever people say about him wrong. And I have a lot of confidence in Andrew. I won't, you know, it takes a lot for me to not believe in somebody who, you know, I care about. And so I believe in Andrew, and, you know, we've had great dialogue with it all.
Mm. And with, you know, Carl was one of those guys that it seemed like your bond was pretty strong mm-hmm. with, that was a big time advocate for you mm-hmm. in this job coach hiring process. What's the next level for him? Yeah. Where can he get to? Because the talent is just undeniable in Carl Towns.
Yeah, he, you know, and I'm appreciative of Carl as, you know, he, you know, the fact that we do share a bond that makes it, you know, makes your job a lot easier as a head coach when you have, you know, one of your all-star players, when you have that bond. But also, you know, our bond is, I'd say, a little differently in a sense that, you know, I'm very hard on him and very direct. And, you know, there were a number of times that, you know, he didn't speak to me for a couple days just because, but it was more, but that shows that it's more than, you know, a coach player relationship. It was, you know, that's the type of thing that happens to your family, with your family. You know, somebody might say something you don't like, and you know at the end of the day you're going to love them in a couple of days and you guys will be, you know, back to normal. But, you know, for a couple of days you're going to be pissed off because mm-hmm. you care about them that much. But, you know, as for his next level, you know, he's the winning component and ultimately leading a team offensively and defensively is going to be big. You said, especially in the West. There are conversations that we've had. We have a great staff as assistant coaches. We've sent some guys out to L.A. when Carl hasn't been in Minnesota. He spent a lot of the summer in Minnesota as well. I think he's there right now. But they've had that conversation with him too, that we need a guy to lead offensively and defensively and in the locker room. It's really important.
As tough as it is in the West, does it feel differently going into the season because – super teams are gone now. I mean, mm-hmm. at least for the time being. You know, you've got some really good teams at the top and some mm-hmm. teams that have been together for a while. But, I mean, if we saw with Toronto last year and the way that everybody spaced out this year, if you have two guys playing at a high level combined with, you know, role players that complement yeah. them well, you can win in the yeah. NBA at the very highest of levels.
Yeah, it does. It makes you think, you know, you think in other ways, I believe, in terms of how you're going to want to approach things and do things, both offensively and defensively. And, you know, seeing that it is wide open, it's still going to be, you know, a tough race in the West with, you know, what a lot of teams have done in terms of accumulating stars. But with that, you know, might not be necessarily full-on super teams around a super team level because, you know, I think that's something, you know, super teams – like Golden State, you know, they earned the right to say that. Hmm. You know, all of us are just trying to, you know, still work our way into, you know, conversations to, you know, where it's not just a team like that, because they've had a lot of deserved success where they've made great moves in their style of play, and, you know, they have really unselfish leadership and, you know, great coaching. And so, you know, for that reason, we're all just trying to get to that level. Mm.
All right, before I let you go, the best coaching, best perk of being a head coach is what? As we record this in your monster suite.
I'll say that.
No, it's got to be something different than this enormous suite, which I'm guessing as the summer league coach, you didn't have.
I did not have
double beds.
This suite is definitely about, as a summer league head coach, my suite was probably like 10 times smaller than this. So
I think so.
No, that's different. But perk for being a head coach, that's a really tough question. Honestly, it would be that your hotel room is bigger. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, that's the one I can think of.
Different seats on the plane, maybe? Do you get it?
No, I stayed in my same seat.
Oh, you stayed in the same seat?
Stayed in my same seat. Yeah. No,
everybody comes to you now.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah, no. And until we hired another person, I stayed in my same assistant coach office. Mm-hmm. I didn't move into the head coaching office until we needed the office mm-hmm. for another person. So I'm not a big perks guy. I mean it when I say I'm just enjoying the work and enjoying.
So you left that head coaching office open for how long?
Well, we hired somebody. I'd say a couple weeks after.
Okay.
But so it wasn't like long, but mm-hmm. it was every I had every intention of staying in that assistant office mm-hmm. until we actually needed the office for space.
Mm-hmm. Did you now? Are you going to decorate that new office differently?
No, I'm just going to keep it.
Keep it the exact same.
Pretty much, yeah. Put a Peloton in there though.
Nice.
A little
nice.
Work, you know, to get a workout
yeah,
in.
Yeah, it looks like you need it, I'm telling you.
Other than that, yeah. Thanks, man.
Ryan Saunders, a.k.a. Billy Haywood. People listen to this podcast, if you see Ryan on the road.
No, you can't do that.
Just put it out there.
I opened up to you guys. Like, come on, just let it roll off a little bit.
Let it be a one-time joke.
Just enjoy the story.
It's a good story, man. Hey, appreciate you doing this, Ryan.
Definitely.